All right, guys. We are celebrating the works of Tom Petty.
Yeah, we are. This week.
All week. Mm-hmm. So, Patrick, on the day after we heard about Tom Petty's passing, we recorded a quick little tribute episode, right?
We got together and sort of, put our heads together on Petty Jim. And like everybody, I think, sort of in the extended Rock in the Suburbs family, it was good to just talk through it a little bit. You know, it helps you process it. That was a difficult day, as we all know. People who had, in all innocence and love of music, attended a music festival and in Las Vegas. And then we got the news of Tom Petty that afternoon, later that night, finally heard, the news. So it was nice to go through and just sort of have a little catharsis and talk it through. And I think, you know, that kind of helped everybody. But now we're trying to go a little deeper, a little wider, as everybody's had time to process the news.
Right.
And Phil Ingracia is here with us. And
thank you, Phil, for joining us.
Yeah,
happy to be here.
For coming on the back patio here. And we're sitting out here in a nice, lovely evening and just trying to, just again, you know, trying to work through everything. But we've had a little time to collect our thoughts and sort of put our feelings about Tom in context. And Phil and our good friend Mike Snyder, have been Petty fans for a long time. Phil, before we jump right in, give us 1 minute, 2 minutes on how you and Mike got to know each other and your friendship.
Well, it's pretty funny. Mike and I were intrepid reporters in the metropolis of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I was a TV reporter, and he was the police guy, and he used to beat me on stories all the time and kind of aggravated me. But it's a very close-knit media group there in Sioux Falls,
yep.
And we became really good friends, played golf together, went to the very few shows that were in Sioux Falls at that time.
Yeah.
So it's been a long-term relationship. And I will also say that I'm the one that urged him to come to USA Today, come out to Washington.
Mike, unfortunately, is also a huge Tom Petty fan, but he's also a big baseball fan too. So tonight he's out supporting the Washington Nationals, but he had a minute earlier today, right, Jim, to put some thoughts down for us.
Yes, but before I play it, I just want to mention that Mike really needs to get his priorities in order.
Guys, I wish I could be there to pay my respects for Tom Petty in person. He was one of my favorite artists of all time. I've probably seen the Heartbreakers more than any other major artist, more than 15 and close to 20 times. I think I first saw the band in 1980 and have seen them in Kansas City, Iowa City, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. A Heartbreakers show was probably one of the first concerts I drove to and took a date with me. Petty's music was inviting. It rocked hard, but it had tender moments. You could connect with the messages in his songs. You could gain energy from songs such as I Won't Back Down and You're Gonna Get It, Baby. And Petty seemed to have music's fans' interests at heart. He fought to keep album prices down, and in concert, his sound setup was always top-notch. While U2 may deliver the most emotional shows for this concert-goer, Heartbreaker shows were the most fun. I remember those early shows how tight the band was, and Petty loved to put them through the paces, stopping and starting, waving his arms up and down during the live performances of Breakdown. Over the years, I tried to interview him, but just couldn't pull it off. One time, he sent me an MP3 of answers to some questions for a story I was writing about high-resolution audio. I bought his last two records on Blu-ray disc to get the best quality version of this music I could. When the band played here this summer in Baltimore, I got to shoot from the photo pit. I took my pictures as fast as I could so I could get up into my seat and enjoy the night. I'm glad I did.
Phil?
Wow, yeah. You know, I went to that show in Baltimore with Mike, and it's just weird. We just felt like we had to be there, and we were there. And unfortunately, that was the last time that he or I will ever see him.
Phil, talk a little bit about your relationship with Tom Petty's music.
Well, you know, one of the things that where I grew up in Minneapolis, it was a really tight playlists in the rock stations. They would not play anything they considered new wave, punk. And one day I'm sitting in my pizza place where I worked, in high school, and I hear Breakdown. It just cuts through everything. First time you hear that song, it's just like, wow, what is this? And I seriously got on the phone to a guy I knew that was coming into work. I said, you got to turn on KQ right now and listen to this song. I mean, it had that kind of effect on me.
Wow.
And you know, now he's, you know, seen as kind of a classic rock staple, but at the time, and for younger people who are listening to this, they just don't understand what it was like where radio controlled whatever you heard.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that was a main thing. And then he broke out and, Damn the Torpedoes was huge. And we followed that and all that.
Right. And the other thing I think people don't realize now is at that time when Tom Petty was first trying to break through and then, you know, a couple of years later actually did.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking mid to late 70s. The rock landscape was very different back then. And so a guy like Petty, who now, you know, today seems like, you know, classic rock and, you know, a guy who's been a mainstay of, you know, sort of mainstream scene, you know, back then was kind of, you know, a rebel, right? And he was being lumped in with like punk and new wave acts because what he was doing, the sort of three chords and the short songs and the back to basics, and all that was what a lot of like the punk bands like the Ramones, stuff like that, were doing.
Yep.
And he didn't really necessarily fit in with what was then sort of the current, you know, sort of rock trajectory, which was these kind of big bloated production numbers, right? And things like that. And it made it more difficult for him, but it's really kind of funny looking back on that today.
Absolutely. I remember a mixtape that we made back in the day, and we had a rock side, you know, that had Zeppelin and all that stuff on it. Yeah. And then we had the new wave side. and we put I Need to Know from the second album on there, you know, because it had that, you know, fit in with the Pretenders and everything else going on at that time, the Clash.
Right.
And so Tom Petty was on our new wave side and not on our rock side of our tape that we would play at our college parties.
You know, that's so interesting to me, Phil. And that so this leads to one of the things that I really wanted to talk to Phil about and hear him expound on a little bit, Jim, is that I need to know, you know, when you and I probably, Phil, you two have read over the past couple days, you know, four or five articles, you know, listen to stuff about Tom's career. Now, there's a song you've hardly heard mentioned, right? You probably didn't hear a lot of people say, I need to know, right? You heard him mention many of the hits, right, that we've already talked about. Now, talk a little bit, Phil, about someone who got introduced to Tom Petty right off the jump, you know, with Breakdown and all the way up through, you know, seeing him in Baltimore not that long ago. Some of those moments that still resonate with you that aren't as well known yet you really feel like are strong, you know, just those great things about the artists we love, those overlooked songs.
Well, there's two records that I see that I think are overlooked. The first one is Long After Dark,
yeah.
And it did have a huge hit on it. You Got Lucky.
It did, but a great album.
From song one to song 10,
yeah.
It is fantastic. And again, for younger folks who really may only know the greatest hits, you really should check this record out.
Yeah.
And I went back and I looked at what the reviews were at the time. Robert Christgau gave it a C+.
Wow.
Rolling Stone gave it a 4-star, but they gave 4 stars to a lot of stuff back then.
Yeah.
And it charted at number 9. So it wasn't really a critical or a commercial juggernaut like mm-hmm. some of the later records mm-hmm. were, but it's also notable for the first Howie Epstein album.
Right. Yeah.
He was the first one.
Oh, that's right.
That was the first one where Howie was on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really kicks off strong with One Story Town.
Yep.
And then if you listen to the vocals of Change of Heart, I mean, I don't know that I've ever heard a song that Petty did where he just really is pushing that song as far as, you know, what he feels, and it's just an incredible breakup song. And then at the end, there's a song called Between Two Worlds, which is just, I mean, it just kills you. And so, you know, for people who haven't really listened to that whole album all the way through, they're in for a big treat, and it's really a strong record. You know, when they used to make records, 1 to 10, very strong song.
You know, and I think that's a really important thing to say, too, is that that's when an album, you know, a little bit more was an album. I don't want to sound like we're sitting here wallowing in nostalgia, you know, or like the old days, because I think that record feels very vibrant. Jim, you and I we listened to it a little bit the other night when you came over.
Yeah.
I actually had the vinyl playing. But think about this, Phil, too. 1982, that's the fifth Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers record. I mean, that's right in where the band was, you know, right at the peak of their powers. And again, you know, Howie Epstein coming in even made the band better. So they're really operating at the peak of their game at this time.
Absolutely. And another record that I think is kind of overlooked is Highway Companion.
Okay.
That's like, you know, almost 25 years later, 2006.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tom's, you know, big popularity had sort of waned. But here he comes out with a record that the first song is Saving Grace, and that was kind of tied to a TV show at the time with Holly Hunter, a show called Saving Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And, but again, it's a record that is all, you know, all the songs on it are very, very strong. It's a great late period example of the power that Tom Petty still had. You know, it didn't get very good reviews at the time. Like Paste gave it 4 out of 10, and it sold okay, but I mean, it really has a lot of great songs on it, and it really is a mature record too when you listen to some of the lyrics and some of what he's talking about.
I'm passing sleeping cities, by degrees, not believing all I see to be so. I'm flying over backyards, country homes and ranches, watching life between the branches below. And it's hard to say who you are these days, but you run on anyway, don't you, baby? You keep running for another place to find that saving grace. I'm moving on alone, over ground that no one owns, past statues that atone
Phil,
for my
to
sins.
What, if it's possible to pinpoint this, and I don't know that I have the answer, why was Tom Petty so consistent? What was it about his longevity that allowed him to be like on your new wave side, yet also, you know, embrace video in the 80s and the 90s, have hits like, you know, Free Fall, and just continue to be so strong? As a lifelong fan, is there anything that you can pinpoint that makes you think this is why, or is he just one of those once in a lifetime, you know, talents?
You know, I think it's kind of where he was from, that he had a genuine connection with with folks. One of the things that I thought was really interesting was Margo Price, and a song like Free Fallin'. You know, I'm kind of, I was cynical about that song. You know, she loves horses and her boyfriend too. I thought he was being funny.
It's easy to make fun of it. Yeah.
You know,
he was, in a way
at the time.
Think, yeah.
But she said, and she's a lot younger than I am, she said that song connected with her.
Is
that because
right?
That's who she feels like.
Wow.
She loves horses. She loves Jesus.
She's a good girl.
And she's a good girl.
Yeah.
And so that song made a totally different connection
right.
with her
yeah.
as an artist, you know. And when I read that, I'm like, boy, I feel like a real jerk for thinking that was a really kind of a funny line. So, I mean, he really could connect with everybody. And if you thought he was funny, like I did with that song, or, you know, maybe 9-year-old Margo Price at that time.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. And that's a good point about a song like Free Fallin'. I mean, it, you know, we sit here and we say, oh, you know, that, you know, people have covered that in maybe ironic or semi-ironic ways, right? I once saw Sebado play a long cover of Free Fallin' as an encore until the club that we were in actually pulled the plug on him because it was about 3 o'clock in the morning and it was time to go. And they just played Free Fallin' until they pulled the plug on him. But they were actually really into it by the end, by when they were really jamming on the song. Phil, you've seen him play a bunch of times, and obviously Mike has. Are there certain memories or moments that stick out in your mind from the shows you've seen where you're just like, this is a quintessential or one of your favorite Tom Petty moments?
Well, I went and saw him. It was another show I went to with Mike, and this was in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And we went to see him at Eagle Bank Arena, which was the Patriot Center back then,
yeah,
in Fairfax, Virginia.
Campus of George Mason University, right?
And the kids there.
Yeah.
I mean, the young folks. This was a few years after Free Fallin', but still, the resonance of that record just kept on going. And Mike and I were joking that it was Sing Along with Tom Petty, because these kids sang full-throated.
Wow.
Every song. It was just something else. And we left the show going, man, did we hear Tom or did we hear, you know, thousands of other people singing his songs? So that's a really strong memory for me. and the fact that he could just still bring in young people, you know, 20 years after his career started.
Yeah, isn't that kind of amazing? I think Phil and I were chatting beforehand. We were downstairs looking at some Petty vinyl that you guys kind of at least felt like you might have been the old guys at a Tom Petty concert, but this is 25, 30 years after his debut. That's kind of an amazing thing. Like, not many things you could say that about. And Phil, let me ask you here in closing, do you feel like Tom Petty has gotten his due both, you know, critically and historically? I mean, we think about Springsteen, right? And we you know, his name has come up already a few times and things like that. But do you feel like he's really appreciated for how great he was?
I think he is, and he will be, and I think it's going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think it's one of these things that it was so quick that it's going to build. I think over the next few months and next few years, I think we're going to see a lot of Petty tributes and the outpouring from the artists. I've never seen anything quite like it.
It's fascinating.
It was really interesting to see all these different people pay tribute to Tom and Twitter and other places.
Yeah, well said.
So you're going to hear this week a lot of people talk about that, and I just want to make one quick point on that because I was thinking about this, Patrick, after we talked before.
Yep.
That one of the things I've really appreciated about some of the tributes that have come out is people talking about what a great lyricist Petty was. And kind of like, remember when Chuck Berry died and we were talking about, again, people were paying tribute to what sort of a great like poet Chuck Berry was. And I think I made the comment at the time, like, you know, I never really had thought about that because you didn't think about that for guys working in that era that
wrote simplistically, right? Yeah.
But would come to think of it, when you go back over it, you're like, wow, this really kind of is amazing the way he would describe people in situations. I think you're getting a lot of the same kinds of tributes about Petty's work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because Chuck Berry was a big influence on Tom Petty.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think initially people maybe didn't give him as much credit as some others because he didn't write about sort of like big, important like issues or themes or things like that. He wrote about feelings and relationships.
Yep.
But when you go back and you actually see the songs that he wrote and the lyrics, he probably did that better than just about anybody. He really was an amazing songwriter in terms of being able to write from the heart about sort of a range of emotions and feelings in a way that the listener could completely understand. And felt like, it almost feels like he's writing it when you connect with it, when you've had that same kind of experience, like he's writing it just for you. Do you know what I mean?
And was able to take over a certain point of view like Chuck Berry and really undertake that and make, you know, just like the Margo Price thing, right? He was able to connect with her as a young girl and really make that feel right.
Almost in a way that you as a listener couldn't articulate it yourself.
Yes.
And you needed that song to sort of like open that up for you, right? And and allow you to sort of explore those feelings.
It was always there. You just didn't know how to articulate it.
Right. Somebody said that he was the best songwriter at writing a first line, you know, that would draw you into a song like, you know, like Listen to Her Heart,
Baby,
or something like that. You think you're going to take her away with your money and your cocaine.
You know,
it really draws you in.
It was nearly summer. It wasn't summer. It was nearly summer. Who doesn't know that feeling, you know?
I just love Baby, Don't It Feel Like Heaven Right Now.
Yeah.
Don't It Feel Like Something from a Dream.
Yeah.
I mean, right there, boom, you got me hooked. Okay, we really have to wrap this up. So you're going to hear more about Petty.
Yep.
We're going to have special guests and celebrity guests.
And I want to say thanks to Phil for riding shotgun with us
all
week.
I'm happy to be here.
Oh, man, it's the best.
Okay, so this is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Phil Ingrassia.
And please listen
every day.
And you can find the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, other podcast platforms. Also, love to hear what the listeners have to say about Tom Petty. We asked people ahead of this week to send us some thoughts, and we're going to play and read some of that stuff on one of the episodes this week. But it doesn't end there.
No,
you got things you want to, you know, tell us about Petty. We'd love to hear it, and we'll put it on a Fan Mail Friday in the future.
Absolutely.
All right. So you can do that by emailing rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call our suburban party line and leave a message. We'd really love that. We'd love to hear you talk about Tom Petty. It's 612-440-1984. And you can also find us on the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @suburbspod. And so we got to get out of here.
Let's keep going.
And we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow.
We'll talk on the streets as you might go solo. Good friend of mine say leaving by your back door. I need to know. If you think you're gonna leave, then you better say so. I need to know. Because I don't know how long I can hold on. If you're making me wait, if you're leading me on. I need to know. Who would have thought that you'd fall for his life? Oh, ever suddenly it's me on the outside.
I was just at a show this past week. The Psychedelic Furs, where pretty much everybody in the audience was, you know, around my age, right? Yeah. There was nobody else. And in fact, my wife's younger coworkers had no idea who she was talking about when she said she was going to go see the Psychedelic Furs.
Wow.
In fact, we're mocking her like, nobody's heard of that band. Are you making that up?